So what we want to do today is we want to talk about syntactic features of Quelzo elements, and that's going to be a review for you. So some of the stuff is going to be stuff you've already seen, and so just kind of refreshing your memory. And then also semantic features of the clause elements, and that's going to be some new stuff for us, most likely, unless you've done some courses in semantics or had a little bit of semantics somewhere else. And then after this, we're going to look at I got a PowerPoint talking about how to make sure we keep syntax and semantics separate and how to do that. So we'll just go through here and we'll do that. Just stop me if things aren't clear. Okay, let's start with our predicator because this is where most grammar books are going to start with. They're going to start with verb phrases and with the predicator. This is the, we could say, the most important element in the clause because of how it determines the other elements, or it calls for the other elements. You'll see here you got two boxes. You got one on the left and one on the right. You've got syntactic features on the left and semantic features on the right. And we'll keep these separate, but realize that there's two ways we can go about analyzing the sentence and how we look at the elements depends on, whether we're using the syntactic analysis or a semantic analysis. So the syntactic part is what I said is going to be a review for you, and the semantic part is going to be kind of new for you. With syntactic features of the predicator, so we know with our predicator is our verb phrase. And so that's how we're in our grammatical analysis. The main verb phrase is going to be our predicator. It could be one verb, or it could be, a lexical verb and some auxiliary verbs. So it could be multiple words, but it's going to be the what determines if there are other elements in the sentence. So you see here it says predicator equals predicate when we have something like the plane landed. That's all we need there. No other elements necessary. Or the predicator is part of the predicate. So the predicate is, the clause is made up of subject predicate. If you remember our different clause types, every clause type had at least subject predicate. So underlined here is landed on the runway. So the plane landed on the runway. It's part of the predicate there, the predicator that is landed. We do subject predicator, and then, if we want to switch it around in questions, for example, predicator subject. We can realize this through both finite and non-finite forms. That means sort of what it's going to look like when we have a predicator. So the finiteness is either going to be marked on the, if it's just one verb, then that's going to be showing tense. So the plane landed, for example, is past tense. Or then we could have auxiliary verbs in there, and they're going to show finiteness, whether they are modal verbs or whether they are tensed primary auxiliaries like be, have, and do. They'll be tensed, and then they'll be followed by the base form of the lexical verb. Okay, so that's syntactic stuff. Let's move over to semantics now. Semantic features of the verb, we have to think about the meaning of the verb. And this is going to be somewhat intuitive for you. So when you do this analysis, you're going to kind of be able to intuitively think about what's involved in the meaning of this verb. But also there's material here to help you out and see what's going on. We can break it up into different types of processes that the verb denotes. The first one being material processes, and these are verbs of doing. This is going to come up in the other PowerPoint I have today. These material processes of doing. Verbs like make, like catch, go, we've got somebody doing something. There are also verbs of mental processes. So when we experience the world, we use, cognitive verbs of perception like see, or cognition, like know, or affectivity, like, and desire, like hope. So these kinds of things. And then there are what we're going to call relational processes of being. So these are the verbs like be and belong. So it's kind of signaling some kind of relation between the elements in the clause. I'm being kind of abstract here, but there's going to be examples for you. There's something you probably haven't seen yet, is the predicate or complement. It's not in the booklet for us here, but just so you know about it, some verbs take a what's called a predicate or complement as an obligatory element. These are verbs that don't passivize, and if they do, then there's the same relationship between the elements is not kept as it is in the active form. So an example here would be have, like we had plenty of time. Doesn't passivize into plenty of time is had, or lack his argument lacks force. Force is lacked by his argument, so that doesn't work for us either. Sometimes we have verbs of sort of equal reciprocity with like resemble. Jane resembles her father. This doesn't passivize. Jane's father is resembled by her. Doesn't work for us. And then verbs of measure, like each ticket costs 2 pounds. Also doesn't passivize. 2 pounds were cost by each ticket. Doesn't work there. But just to keep you aware of what's going on. Okay, so let's look at another element in the clause. And this is the other, shall we say, central element in the clause. And this is the subject. The subject is a syntactic element. I'm going to make that super clear later on today. But for right now, let's realize that the subject is something that we tell using syntactic features. We do a syntactic analysis. So subject is a syntactic label. The features of it are that it comes before the predicator. This is in your active declarative clauses. So something like the spring term is long, or who did your homework? And it would come after the finite operator in yes no questions. So did everyone pass the exam? The answer, it's a yes no question. And when we make those questions, we put a finite operator in front of the subject. And here it's did. And we know it's finite because it's showing tense there. So it's an auxiliary verb there showing tense. You can see that the lexical verb is on the other side of the subject, pass. Subject is what determines the number and person concord. So the neighbor's dog barks all the time. So showing our or they leave all the garbage, their garbage lying around. So showing our concord here. So we have to form the verb in a certain way. This is four verbs that inflect for these things. Okay, semantic features here. It's a little bit different because it's a little bit different analysis. So the subject, the element that is the subject, can occupy different semantic roles. And this is the sort of crux of semantic analysis here, are the roles. And this, I'm going to make this clear. So if it doesn't make sense right now, I'm going to show you a lot of examples and make this clear a little bit later. So let's look at one. We have this sentence, Jones headed the ball into the net. In this case, Jones is our subject. We can test for it syntactically. It's coming before the predicator, for example. It would be if we, asked a yes no question, it would answer the yes no question. So who headed the ball into the net? Jones, for example. And in a semantic analysis, it is occupying the role of agent. And agent is more or less the kind of doer of the action in the sentence. I'm going to make that definition clear a little bit later. But the subject doesn't have to be the agent. So the subject could be the affected. The ball was headed into the net by Jones, for example. And here the ball is the subject syntactically. Semantically, it's affected. It's the element that kind of is acted upon by the agent. In this case, we don't have the agent in the sentence. Jones presumably would be the agent. We can have other ones as well, like effected. The letter was written by my mother, so this is kind of like created, right? The letter, my mother created the letter, but the letter is syntactically the subject here. We could have things like experiencer. I feel a little tired today. I feel a little sick of Zoom school today. And then, it's the verb here is not this kind of action that we have with headed, and Jones headed the ball. So Jones is kind of performing this action. Jones has sort of volition and power to perform this action onto another object. With I feel a little tired today, the verb feel is different. It has a different meaning there. We're not like actively feeling this kind of thing. We're instead describing our experiences. Well, the subject is describing the experience, right? We could have an instrument as a role. This key won't open the front door. And you can see how why it's called an instrument here. These are explained more in the Downing and Locke book, and I have the page numbers for you a little bit later. I could actually maybe even upload them to Moodle, but it's more or less chapter 5. We also have things like recipient. The secretary has been given some chocolates. So now here we've got the secretary as the subject, and semantically, the role here is recipient. They are receiving something from something that's not actually in this clause right now. We don't know who is giving the chocolates. But okay, let's look also at our different realizations here. So we know that, okay, we're going to leave semantic analysis aside for just a second here, and we're going to jump back to syntactic analysis. Because we know that we can have different things be the subject. This is actually going to come up a little bit later as well. So probably the most typical subject is a noun phrase, because I don't know, nouns are things that can do things, something like that. So something like the giant hamburger fell from the roof, right? That's a noun phrase there, and it's the subject. That's not what we have to have, though. We could have a finite clause as the subject. That he did so well was a great surprise to everyone. And there are ways to test for this. I mean, this passed our test for a subject. It comes before the predicator, for example. We could have a non-finite clause. To take such a risk was rather foolish. So non-finite clause because we have a non-finite verb form here, to take. We don't have any finite verb here, unlike the previous one. That he did so well, did is showing tense, so it's finite. Some other kind of strange ones that maybe we don't necessarily want to think of as subject-like as a noun phrase are what we call the anticipatory it. And then the finite or non-finite clause. So English has these kinds of sentences. English kind of has a problem when there's nothing in the role of subject. Other languages don't have this problem. Other languages can just kind of start off with a verb phrase. English can do that, of course, in the imperative, like, I don't know, get to the chopper or something like that. When the In those cases, the subject is not included, but assumed to be the listener or the hearer, the one that the language is being directed at. So what English does instead is it uses this, it puts it there in the subject place there, and then kind of moves the rest of the information to the end. But this is another thing that English likes to do as well, because having this kind of heavy clause in the beginning, something like that he failed the course, is a little bit too much. English likes usually likes the subjects to be not so heavy. So we say instead, it surprised nobody that he failed the course. There's other reasons for this as well, like introducing new information. English likes to introduce new information at the end of a sentence rather than the beginning. Your other languages may differ on this, but this is just something that English likes. Then we have our dummy it or our empty it. So something like it is snowing. Again, English doesn't like to have nothing in the subject there. So we just dump this it in there. And it doesn't really refer to anything. It's kind of like snowing exists right now. But we can't say that really either. That doesn't exactly mean the same thing. So we say it is snowing, it is raining, blah, blah, blah. Other languages just get by saying something like, you know, sata or whatever the verb is for raining or snowing or something. Then we have this this word there that goes in our subject place. And it's kind of, well, it's sometimes called the existential there because what it means again is, you know, here there's plenty of time is kind of like, there exists plenty of time. So we kind of postpone this noun phrase to the end. This there is not actually pointing to a location. Like, for example, if you say, you know, my phone is over there, then you're pointing to some kind of location, and there is referring to a location in space. Here, it's kind of just an existential that you're saying that something that exists. We could also have prepositional phrases. Before winter is the best time to rake the leaves. We can have adverbial groups. Now is the time to act. We can even have adjective phrases as the subject, although they're kind of somewhere in between adjectives and noun phrases, because we could have something like the rich need to be eaten. Something like that. Here, rich, the rich there. Okay, it's rich is an adjective, and maybe we don't want to call it a noun, but we're putting a article in front of it, and we do that with nouns. We don't do that with adjectives. So something like that. Right, let's go on here. Let's look at some other elements here. Direct object. Syntactic features are that it comes after the predicator. It becomes the subject in passive clauses. So that's when we make the passive in English, we have to have a direct object. We have to have an object that we can move into the subject position. And then what was in the subject position can either still be in the clause, or can in passives, you can usually drop it. So something like the victim has been identified by the police. We could just drop it and say that the victim has been identified. There's placement going on with objects, because usually we have indirect object, then a direct object. Occasionally we move the indirect object to after the direct object, and we front it with a preposition. So we have something like, they gave me a list of my classrooms today. Me is the indirect object, and a list of my classrooms is the direct object. We could move it to the end, though, and put a to in front of it. So they gave a list of my classrooms to me today. All right. So that's the syntactic features that we're aware of in the review. Now let's look at some semantic features of it. Again, like the subject, it can occupy different semantic roles. The semantic roles, as you can see, are not, you know, based on things like its placement or its ability to become, you know, another syntactic role like the subject. It's not based on that kind of stuff. Instead, we're keeping the same kinds of roles here. And now, you know, he headed the ball into the net. Okay, the ball is the object, but that's a syntactic analysis. Instead, we want to look at semantically, the ball here is the element in the clause that's affected by the agent, the action undertaken by the agent, he. She wrote children's books. So this looks similar to what we just saw. The, books are created by her, effected. Okay, hold on. There's something in the chat. What does V's mean? It means vis-a-vis. So here, where is it? Placement vis-a-vis other objects. So let's say I can say it like this, in relation to. How's that? Placement in relation to other objects. If there are other objects. So there doesn't always need to be other objects. But if there are, then usually the kind of default way is to do indirect object, then direct object. Okay, let's go back to the semantic features here, look at some more. Instrument, we saw already the teacher tried to use the PowerPoint to show her material. I felt a new one here is phenomenon. I felt a sudden pain in my arm. You can see here that this doesn't fit the role of, say, affected. The pain was not, the action of feeling was not visited upon the pain by me. It doesn't fit like that. Or the pain was not created by me, so it's not affected like that. Locative, the car turned the corner too fast. So it's kind of a location in space here. And as we saw with before, so we know this already. This is a review here. We can realize that the ob direct object in different ways. We can realize it with a noun phrase, what we have in the middle here, he painted the house, or a finite clause. I wonder what is wrong with him. Looks totally normal to us here. It's finite because it's got this finite verb in it, is. These are often called nominal clauses because what they are doing is they're kind of falling into a spot where we expect a noun phrase. This isn't a noun phrase, and we don't want to call it a noun phrase. We also don't want to say that we don't want to pick one word and make that the object. So sometimes you'll see in bad grammar explanations, they pick out one word and make that the subject. And we don't need to do that, or make that the object. We don't need to do that. Instead, we have the whole noun phrase. Usually they'll pick out, the head or something. But in finite clauses, we don't need to do that. We can just say, what is wrong with him? Same thing with non-finite clauses. We've got a non-finite verb here. It's the to infinitive. If you're confused about the difference between finite and non-finite clauses, that's totally understandable because I am also confused by this a lot, although I've repeated it so many times that now I think I have a good understanding of it. But the information is in the booklet. Maybe it's just something you need to memorize. Maybe you are better than me and you sort of just read it once and then you understand it on a, deeper level. But if you have questions about it, please get in touch. I have resources for you to help you understand it. And then some other ones, anticipatory it, finite, non-finite clause. He finds it flattering to have so many fans. So this is similar to what we saw with the subject. Prepositional phrases, I would prefer before noon for the meeting. So yeah. All right, let's go on here and look at some other syntactic elements since we're having so much fun. Then we have prepositional object. These are objects that are fronted by a preposition. So they're kind of introduced by a preposition. We need to have a preposition in there, or else the sentence is ungrammatical or the meaning changes. So something like Joe looked after my cat. If we don't have the after in there, it's ungrammatical. Joe looked my cat doesn't work. Also, if we change the preposition, then it's a different meaning. Joe looked for my cat, for example. But what it's doing here is just like other objects, you can see here it's in bold, it says encodes a participant. So it introduces a new actor in the clause, a new thing. Unlike what we're going to see with subject complements, it's just referring to the same thing as the subject. Here, my cat is referring to a different participant than Joe. Joe is not my cat. My cat is not Joe. So there's two things here now. The preposition is usually associated with a particular verb. So look after, for example. And then, like I said, either either we're ungrammatical here, or then we have a different meaning. So something like see to the baggage, if we remove it, we get see the baggage, and then that's a different meaning. Okay. Indirect object is next. We have here, when we have two complements in a clause, so we need to have a ditransitive verb, a verb that's calling for two complements, like give, for example. So when you give, when you use the verb give, usually you have to give something to someone or give someone something. And like we said, indirect object, then direct object. We can replace it with a to phrase after the direct object. So this is what I told you already. The doctor gave treatment for shock to the injured man. The injured man here is the indirect object. Could be before it. The doctor gave the injured man treatment for shock. And in some cases, we do remove the direct object. So who told you the answer? Who told you instead? Semantic features, fewer semantic roles than the direct object. There, it can be a recipient, you know, for verbs like buy and give. It can be a beneficiary. Also in verbs like buy and give, here we have reserved. So us is the beneficiary of the bill's reserving of the tickets. Oops. That's the two we have right now. I'm going to talk a little bit more about semantic roles after this PowerPoint. How much time we got? Yeah, we're okay. Okay, so some ways to realize it. Typically, we have a noun phrase. My father taught me and my brother. So here's your noun phrase here, to drive. We could have a non-finite ing clause. I give lecturing more and more time these days. Or even a prepositional phrase. Let's give before Christmas priority over next January. Okay. I told you subject complement was coming up, and here it is. This is when we have copular verbs, and we have a verb that requires another element, requires a complement, but the complement refers to the same thing as the subject. So that's kind of what the copular verb is. Sometimes there, you may know the term linking verb, or, I mean, from if you took exploring grammar or English linguistics, then you know the term subject complement. One test for it is you can't make it a subject in a passive clause. And another one is, you know, there's co-referentiality going on here. So they've referred to the same thing. Semantic features. It doesn't have the semantic roles because it provides information about the subject. With regard to, you know, subject's identity or the subject's attributes or something like that. So there's not the semantic roles here. So an example would be something like the concert was fantastic. Fantastic is referring to the same thing as the subject, the concert. And here it's giving an attribute. Our meeting was a great success. Again, we've got this copular verb here. So one easy trick, if you see the verb be as the predicator, then you can be almost certain that you're dealing with a subject complement. I would say, let's just say 100% certain. And if you find some examples where that's not the case, then let me know. Bonus points. Another one, identifying the orchestra was the London Philharmonic. So the orchestra, the London Philharmonic, these are referring to the same thing in the outside world. Some different realizations here. Adjective phrase is very common, but also noun phrases and even finite clauses and non-finite clauses. Okay. Here, these all have be as the copula, but some other examples of a copula verb are become and seem and appear, and these kinds of things. Then we have the object complement. This is when, okay, we've again have two complements required, but one of them is a direct object, and then what follows is co-referential with that direct object. So it's not a new participant in the clause. So there's some kind of relationship with the object here. It's the same referent, for example. So we found the new secretary very helpful. And here, very helpful and the new secretary are co-referential. So they're referring to the same thing. Very helpful is not a new participant in the clause. We can actually, I don't think I have it on here. You can test for it by taking the direct object and making it a subject and then following it with a copula verb. You can just use be and then putting in the object complement. And it should give you a subject, predicator, subject complement sentence. So the new secretary is very helpful. Works. Semantic features, it provides information about the object here. So it gives, again, like the subject complement, attributes related to the object, some kind of identification of the object. They appointed him manager. He is manager. Or some circumstance which relates to the direct object in a given situation. She likes her clothes simple and elegant, like that. Various realizations here, just like the subject complement. We could have an adjective phrase, we could have a noun phrase, we could have a finite clause, and we could even have a prepositional phrase in these circumstantial object complements. So consider this: the children left the house in a mess. This meaning of left here is not to sort of exit or not that kind of meaning. Instead, it's to what's another word for left here? I'm blanking on this here. To well, the children left the house in a mess means that they did not clean up, so they exited without doing something rather than just exiting. So this in a mess is needed here. By it's called for by the verb there. Okay, finally, I think this is finally here is the adverbial. So this is all the ones that are optional. These can be, oh no, this isn't the last one. There is one after this. These can be omitted without changing grammaticality of the clause. So if we can get rid of it, then it's an adverbial. If we can get rid of it and keep the clause grammatical, then it's an adverbial. Provides non-essential information about the context of a clause. Non-essential according to the grammar. Essential according to, I don't know, pragmatics or sounding like a normal person, then it's essential. But grammatically, non-essential. And we can add it to any of the basic clause structures. There's a few different types here, adjuncts, disjuncts, and conjuncts. So we can classify these as well. Adjuncts are ones that provide circumstantial information. They're realized by adverbs, adverb phrases, and prepositional phrases. And they're pretty flexible as far as where they can be put. So, if at all possible, I'll see you tomorrow after the show with Pete and Susan outside the main entrance. The only parts necessary in this clause are I'll see you. Everything else is adjunct, adverbial. Disjuncts or stance adjuncts, they provide some kind of attitudinal comment by the speaker. So the speaker is sort of giving some kind of comment about their feelings or their attitude towards what they're saying. They're a little bit separate from the clause, since their meaning kind of covers the whole clause or the sentence. So that's why we usually place these in the beginning or at the end, because they kind of cover the whole thing. So we have things like naturally he spoke to me when he saw me. And then conjuncts or connective adjuncts, these are sort of what, kind of exactly what they sound like. They're connectors. They show how a speaker or writer sees a connection between two utterances or parts of utterances. They're used between groups, like phrases, noun phrases, verb phrases, that kind of thing. Clauses, sentences, these kinds of things. So we have examples like Lord Shaftesbury was a persuasive speaker and furthermore a great pioneer of social reform. Okay. Then the one we want to talk about is everyone's favorite, the locative complement. These ones predict a circumstantial element. And by predict here, it's bold and underlined, meaning, this is when some circumstantial element is necessary, grammatically necessary. There's various types of circumstantial elements, but we're going to group them all under the term locative complement. So, we could have locations in space or time. And these are going to come after verbs of position, like be and stay and live and lie. So something like the farm is situated in a valley. It would be ungrammatical to have the farm is situated. We need this in a valley. There could be some sort of extent in time or place. So verbs such as take or last, the journey takes several hours. We need this several hours here. There's directions or goals. These are verbs of movement, come, go, fly. So you can see examples there. There's sources, so kind of the other side of direction or goal. She tiptoed out of the bedroom. And then there's manners, like behave. She is behaving rather strangely. So not just if we say she is behaving, that means she is acting good. But if we say she is behaving rather strangely, then behaving is just the sort of base meaning of similar to just acting, being. Note here, though, that if a clause is missing any one of these circumstantials, and if it's not present in any of the code texts, you will notice its absence. So most likely you'll react to the absence by asking a question like, well, how did she behave? Or where did they fly? Or where was the farm situated? So you'll notice the absence of them there. Cool. The clause cruncher was for homework. I'm going to pause the recording here. All right, so we're going to look here. We're going to do something hopefully a little bit fun. We'll see how it goes here. I don't know what could be more fun than talking about subject complements, but maybe we have something. This is going to be about Yoda's grammar. So one of somebody one of your fellow classmates tipped me off to this website talking about Yoda's grammar and got me intrigued. And it actually is an example of mixing up syntactic and semantic analyses. So that's what we just looked at in the previous PowerPoint. And I know I've told other classes, and I've probably told this class to keep these things separate. And I was probably very abstract with my when I was talking about that. So instead, I'm going to use this to kind of show you in action why we don't want to mix these things up. And also Yoda from Star Wars. So yeah, let's go on here. So all right, quick review. This is what we just looked at, so I won't go along this so much, but you can see there is a separation between syntax and semantics. So this is from the previous PowerPoint. But let's go on here. I have some on this PowerPoint. Things should be animated well, but bear with me here. Fingers crossed the animations are going to work well. I don't know if they are. We'll see. Okay. So let's check out this mix-up between semantics and syntactic analyses. Here's the post. It says, yes, Yoda's grammar is technically correct. Okay. I'm listening. Go on. And it says, every complete English sentence contains a subject and a predicate, with the subject being what the sentence is about. Before I let's stop even there. Every complete English sentence contains a subject and a predicate. That's not the case. So this is not a good way to start. With the subject being what the sentence is about, and the predicate telling you something about the subject. Also, not necessarily the case. So let's look at what's going on here. Not every complete English sentence has a subject. We know that we have what's called imperatives. And imperatives, the subject is not present, but it's usually implied from the context. So usually it's you, it's the person being addressed. Sometimes we even tack on a reflexive pronoun. Like yourself, get to the chopper yourself. Downing, which you can look up online, this is the e version of the book available in the library, and has a link on the Moodle page. It says the subject must be present in declarative and interrogative clauses, but is not required in the imperative. The example they use is fasten your seat belts. No subject there. Here's a image from the Downing book where you can see the different clause types there. So there's the two types of interrogatives, yes, no, and WH ones. Then there's exclamatives, which have subjects as well. And then the last one down there is the imperative. No subject, base form of the verb. Imperatives in Star Wars. There are them. We have them. They exist. So do or do not, there's no subject here. Yoda is just using the imperative. But when we have there is no try, now we have this existential there being the subject. So that's our declarative sentence. I told you in the last slide we have this in our booklet as well. We can, how do we find the subject? If we're not saying that it's what the sentence is about, how do we find it? Well, we can test for it. You can, I don't know, maybe Jedis can use the Force to find subjects. That would be, I don't think that's something that's brought up in Star Wars, but I don't know, maybe in the books. There are other tests we can do, however, though. The since with the subject is a syntactic element, we need to do a syntactic analysis of it. One of the tests we can do is we can add a question tag. And when we add the question tag, the subject is the element that gets picked up and referred to anaphorically with a pronoun. So we have something like Darth Vader is your father, isn't he? And he there is what gets picked up. He is referring to Darth Vader. Anaphorically means referring to something previously stated. Could be in the same sentence, could be previous sentence. So here, Darth Vader is our subject, and then our question tag is, isn't he? The subject we know is placed before the finite verb and declarative clauses. And in WH interrogative clauses, where the WH element is subject. The force will be with you, coming before our predicator there, or our finite verb. Will is our finite verb there. It's modal verb, so showing modality. And oops, and who is my father? Who is the subject there? Coming before our finite verb. Other tests we can do. We can say it's placed after the finite operator, so the first element of the verb phrase, in yes or no questions, and in WH questions where the WH element is not the subject. So an example would be, are you my father? R is our finite operator there, and you is subject. What film did you see last night? What film is the object here? You is the subject. Also, we know the subject is what determines the concord of number and person in verbs that show inflection. So Darth Vader slash he has used the force. It's not have because the subject, Darth Vader, takes the form of the verb has. Where is my father or where are my parents? So my parents being plural takes this are form. There's other tests as well. You can check those out. See the Downing book. There's two pages there where it lists the ways of telling the subject. Okay, so now let's go into semantic analysis. All right. This idea of what the sentence is about, this is something you're going to come across. I'm using this article about that's about Yoda's grammar. Well, I'm not really using it that much, but at least the first part of it, that's about Yoda's grammar, just because it's the most recent one I came across, but it's not the only one I've come across, and I'm sure I'm going to come across it again. So when you're out there on your own on the internet reading grammar sites, and they say that the subject is what the sentence is about, yeah, I guess this is something we can say. I mean, yeah, we can sort of often say that that this sentence is about the thing that is also the subject in this sentence, but that's not really a way, that's not how we analyze language. Like if you came into grammar class and I said, what is this sentence about? You know, some of you might have one answer, some of you are going to have another answer, and then some of you are going to have a third answer, and all this kind of stuff. It's kind of a poor way to analyze language there. It's what's behind it, though, is this idea of semantic roles that we talked about in the previous PowerPoint there. So the idea behind it is, and remember how I was telling you, it can be kind of intuitive, the semantic roles. So that's what's going on behind it. So this idea of what the sentence is about, it's more or less correct, but it's really way too simple to be useful either in semantic analysis, or then it's just too, I mean, it's just not how we decide syntactic elements. So it's just not how we do syntax. That's not one of the questions we answer when we look at syntax. And also remember, subject is syntax, not semantics. So, okay. If we're looking for, if we're doing semantic analysis, we're not looking for things like subject or object. Those are syntactic analysis. Keep those over that side. Instead, what we're looking for are things like semantic roles. And here's where I was telling you that I was going to, define these roles a little bit better for you. And I bet you thought, I mean, I'd said it enough times, you were like, oh, this probably is going to be fun. And now I have these long definitions of semantic roles for you. And you're like, hey, you lied to me. This isn't fun. And I'm sorry. I walked you right into it. I wish I had a really good Star Wars reference here or metaphor here. But whatever. Maybe I should have watched the movies before this lecture. Although there's like, so 15 hours of Star Wars or more. I don't know. Anyways, the agent is one of the semantic roles. The agent's kind of like the doer in the clause. The agent's what has, and this is a quote from Downing, has the energy, volition, intention, and the one that's capable of initiating or controlling the action. So usually it brings about some kind of change of location or properties in itself and others. So kind of like the doer, if there is a doer. The affected is a participant in the clause. It's someone or something that is affected by the action denoted by the verb in an active clause. Okay, this is where the confusion happens, because the agent is the subject sometimes. So the element of the sentence that's both that is realizing the agent role can be the subject, but it doesn't have to be. So we saw this a little bit earlier in our previous lecture, but we'll go over it again. So we have here something like Yoda taught Luke the ways of the Force. Yoda's our subject here. Yoda's also our agent here. So Yoda is the doer kind of thing. And Yoda would, if we did a syntactic analysis, would fit the roles of the subject. If we had instead, Luke was taught the ways of the Force by Yoda. Now we've got Yoda as an object here. But Yoda's still the agent. So remember our idea of like the subject is what the sentence is about. You know, Yoda taught Luke the ways of the Force. Is this sentence about Yoda, or is it about Luke, or is it about the Force? Same thing with Luke was taught the ways of the Force by Yoda. Is this sentence about Luke or the Force or Yoda or teaching or something like that? I mean, we could just answer this sentence is about Star Wars. Star Wars is the subject, but no. Here we have Luke is the subject, and now Luke, the role fulfilled by Luke is affected. There's more on this in page 18 in our booklet, so you can check that out. But you're probably wondering, okay, that's all great and good. We have agent and affected, and are we done now? Or are there more semantic roles? There are more semantic roles. You can see some of them in our booklet or in the Downing book. What they are depends on who you ask. I'll explain that a little bit more very quickly. It's not going to be a good answer, so I'm just going to apologize up front. Some of the common ones that you'll see, though, are recipient, beneficiary, source, location, these kinds of things. So this is what you'll see in places like the Downing or something else. I put, or no, I didn't put this on the Moodle page, but this is the ebook, the Downing ebook. So chapter 5 goes over this, discusses roles and discusses, you know, when a little bit of syntax and semantics and sort of how we decide upon what role things are. So you can check out chapter 5. This chapter will also help you in this course. So reading this chapter will definitely help you do better in this course. And by that, I mean the exams. And there's a section called Force in this chapter. So, I mean, this is like very, this is very fitting for this lecture. Okay. A review from our previous slide. So we saw, you know, subject can occupy different semantic roles. We went over this already. I'm not going to do it again for you here. But getting back to that idea of like, it depends on who you ask. Yes, there are different lists of roles that have been proposed by different semanticists. So over time, as this theory has developed, they have put forth different, they have named different roles like agent and affected and instrument and this kind of stuff. The only thing is, though, there are some problems with this theory. Some problems that we probably don't have with, you know, say, a syntactic test for subject, because we have things like, you know, it comes before the finite verb, or I mean, yeah, some things don't seem as subjecty as other things. You know, noun phrases typically seem like the most able to be subject, but we can see other ones, non-finite and finite clauses being subjects. The thing is with semantic roles, the problems are a little bit deeper than that, because sometimes we have a verb where it's really hard to assign any of the roles to the elements. And this is a problem because we can't just invent new roles when we come across a problem like this, because when are we going to stop inventing roles? The idea is that we have this sort of small, finite set of roles, and then this will cover our language. Or for semantics, it at least should be cross-linguistic, so it should cover languages. And there you might run into more problems as well. Whereas in syntax, we're just talking about English, for example. This is the subject, and this, in English. Another problem is that sometimes a participant in the clause can be several roles at once, and there's no good way of deciding if it's one or the other, or if it's more like one role than another role. So there's a chapter I posted on the Moodle page. This is from Riemer's book, Introducing Semantics. So if semantic roles really, got you excited, and you were thinking that, boy, now I've watched all the Star Wars I can, I really wish I could read about semantic roles, you're in luck, because the chapter's there for you. The book's available as an ebook, though, so you can go check it out of the library. It explains the problems more as well. It's chapter 10, so I mean, maybe some more semantic knowledge is helpful. I don't know, though. You're already have done a lot of studies in linguistics, so you should be okay. But of course, you're welcome to ask me any questions you have. Let's jump back, though, to this article for just a second, because it also makes a couple more mistakes that I want to point out for us here. And it's just indicative of other articles I've read online that are not so good, Al. So it says here, ready. This is, I think, the one of the not the second paragraph, but sort of shortly. Well, it's not even that long of an article, but ready for a crash course on English syntax? You know it. I'm always ready for that. So let's hear it. The subject of a sentence will always be a noun or a pronoun. Not true. I mean, no. You cannot form a statement without one. I don't understand this. Huh? Of course we can form statements without subjects. Do it all the time. A predicate contains at least one verb. Yeah. Okay. Fine. That expresses an action or state of being about the subject. I mean, I guess it does. I mean, that's kind of what the predicator does, but they're not always expressing actions, states. There's other things as well. This is, again, a little too simplistic for us here. And then there's a link here. It says more on verbs here. I don't want you to go here. So I actually didn't link to this article, I don't think. So just stay off of it. It's more or less correct that what they link to here, but too simple for our analyses. We know that subject can be noun phrases, finite clauses, prepositional phrases, adverb phrases, all kinds of fun stuff. Not always a noun or a pronoun. That's just incorrect. I mean, I'd imagine that there is a, I haven't looked, but I imagine in this article, there are sentences where the subject is not a noun or pronoun. And here, recognize it says noun or pronoun, not noun phrase. And also, look at this first sentence here. Ready for a crash course on English syntax? What's the subject here? It seems like there might not be a subject. Interesting. I thought we had to have a subject. Okay. So, I mean, there you go. All right. There's other bad stuff on that post. They linked to some bad grammar, other bad grammar posts. They do link to one really good linguistic resource, but I don't know. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut sometimes, right? So I'd stay away from that one if I was you. Don't go looking for it. Instead, I know I promised you some Yoda grammar, but that was just, well, as they say, it's a trap. So I'm not actually going to do Yoda grammar for you here. There are, however, three articles that discuss Yoda's grammar here. The first one's from The Atlantic, so this is a magazine. And the other two are from the language, the linguistics blog, Language Log. They're older posts, but I've checked them out, and they are legit. They're good. So the first one's going to give you a good idea of Yoda's grammar there. Alrighty. I'm going to stop the recording now. I think that's all I have for this one. Yep. Okay.